meeting, and we hope you will have a pleasant day in Cape Town. I hope that we all have copies of the program. In case we do not, indicate, it will be made available to you. We would like to start, Comrade Minister, by handing over to you and your team to introduce yourselves. Then the Auditor General Office will introduce themselves, then members of Parliament, and then we can then engage, knowing who do we have amongst ourselves. I'm not sure whether Mr. Treasurer is represented here today. From the minister and his delegation, to National Treasury, then AG, and then members of Parliament, Comrade Minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I will introduce my senior team in the department, and then I will ask the chairperson of NSFAS to introduce his own team, if that's okay.
No, they can introduce themselves. I was just being calling out to Vula Masam. Then everyone can introduce them.
Oh, everyone can introduce themselves. Yeah. No. Thank you very much, Chair. For now, I don't have much to say other than the fact that we appreciate the opportunity to engage on this very important matter, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, which basically is the only instrument that we have at the moment in terms of our goals to support academically deserving but students who come from poor backgrounds to be able to access higher education. So this is a matter, much as we are the responsible executive authority, but this is a matter, of course, that is very important for the country as a whole, not least this particular committee.
All right. Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir. I'm Greg Onde, the acting DG for Higher Education and Training.
Kirsty Menon, acting DDG, Universities.
Ian Stradu, CFO, Higher Education and Training.
I am Zamayeto Sokais, the chairperson of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, NSFAS.
Good morning, I'm Colette Kane, a board member of NSFAS.
Good morning, I'm Stephen Smith, chairman of the audit committee of NSFAS and board member with effect of 15th of December 2010.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Johnston, chairperson of the NSFAS Finance Committee and board member.
Morning, Chair. Nico Marais, National Treasury Parliamentary Office.
Good morning. I'm Evita Beskogne of National Treasury of the Office of the Accountant General.
Thank you very much. I was struggling to recognize you this year. Okay. What is the General's Office?
Good morning, Chair. Justin Diedrichs, Business Executive for the AGSA Western Cape.
Morning, Melanie Joffe, Senior Manager, AGSA.
Good morning, Gavin van der Hoeven, Stakeholder Liaison, Auditor General.
Good morning, Morgan Nwatiwa, Audit Manager representing NSM Young.
All right. Can we have members of Parliament introducing themselves? We'll start in KZN.
Sometimes you're flanked by KZN, but not today. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Minister Naren Singh, member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Mark Steele, member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Pete Pretorius, member of SCOPA.
Morning, Roy Ainsley, member of SCOPA.
Dumelang Tapela Chilong, member of SCOPA. morning. Sarah Moye, I'm a member of SCOPA.
Tumela bagaetsho. Ke nna Ntebale Matladi, ke tokololwa komiti.
Tobel, leina la ka ke nna Setlamorago wa Thobejane, ke leloko la komiti.
Thank you very much, Comrade. I'm Comrade Temba Koti. I chair this committee. Comrade Minister, I'm sure you do have a sense of...
Chair, sorry to interrupt you. Just a question before we start. Mr. Seymour and Mr. Faisal Ali, are they going to be joining us?
Well, I can't answer that now, but I'm sure I'll throw it in that direction. And I'm sure it might be responded to. Anyway, Comrade Minister was saying that we welcome you, and we fully appreciate your personal commitment to be here. Which led to the postponement of the engagement, which was supposed to be last week, so that you could be here. And I'm sure you would appreciate our interest as a committee in engaging with this entity, not only because of its importance in terms of ensuring that access to higher education is broadened. In the light, of course, of the desired positive changes that are taking place in education, but also because, of course, the annual report, especially the report of the Auditor General, did not reflect well on the runnings of the entity. Honorable Steele raised a question around the absence, in terms of the list that was sent to us, the absence of the CEO and the CFO of the entity. Before we engage, is there any explanation that you can get, because I see the chairperson of the audit committee is here, whose job is to advise management on measures that must be taken to get things right, but the key people in management are not here. Is there any explanation we can be given around that?
Chairperson, thank you very much. The board of NSFAS is discussing the future of the CEO, and given the appropriate time, we'll discuss these issues, but I've got no intention to take this matter to the public.
Well, you have not said much that assists us to have an understanding of why these two officials are not here. Can you just loosen up, and I mean, you are in Parliament. Give us the information so that we have a sense of what is happening.
The board has already engaged with Mr. Seymour that we're not sharing the same vision in terms of the NSFAS. And that matter is being mediated between the board and Mr. Seymour. And therefore, he has been instructed not to engage to the future activities of NSFAS. And that is the situation at this point in time.
So in layman's language, you suspended.
Not yet. But he has already agreed to leave NSFAS.
And Mr. Ali, the CFO?
Mr. Ali has his wife had a baby as yesterday, and therefore it was difficult for him to come and join us today. And I think there was a difficulty in labor along with those circumstances.
Okay, all right. That's fine. I'm sure that that clarifies the position. Mr. Steele?
I'm sorry, Chair. I think the chairperson of the board is actually being less than candid with us. Either his CEO is or is not suspended, and if so, we need to know why that is the case. The board are accountable for the use of public funds, and they need to account to this body as to exactly what the situation is with regard to their CEO, what has happened, and more importantly, why has this happened. We can't just be told that they don't share the same vision. That is simply not enough.
Chair, once again, I would say just loosen up and just give us the facts as they are, so we have a better picture. We're on the same wavelength with you. But before you respond, Sin, so that you can then respond to everything, because I want us to immediately go to the agenda.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think while we accept what the Chairman is saying about the absence of the CEO, see, one of the difficulties we've had in Scopa all the time is that you don't get responsible people to answer questions. Now, we're going to be engaging. The Minister has taken time off to be here with senior officials. We're going to be engaging on this annual report, which the CEO is also partly responsible for what is in this report, although the board is the accounting authority. Now I just want comfort that if we are going to proceed in questioning, we can get the kind of answers that we deserve, so that we can make an informed decision on this annual report and the outcome of the financial statements and the performance management report.
All right, let's respond to Honorable Steele. I think as for Honorable Singh's concern, you are legally the body that must come and account here. So I'm sure you've prepared yourself, you've looked at all the issues that were raised, and we'll be able to get the necessary answers.
Chairperson, is exactly that. We've prepared ourselves as the board to come and account on behalf of NSFAS. And I'm leading this delegation to come and account openly.
Right, let's start with Phil's question. What's this issue around an unshared vision?
Chairperson, the Minister appointed me to become the chairperson of NSFAS on the 15th of December, 2010. And I hit that running. And I can assure you, on the 7th of January, I had a full board meeting at NSFAS. And with the board and the executive committee of NSFAS, we've been engaging directly with the management led by the CEO. In the number of occasions where the CEO accountable to this board has not even helped us in any situation. Yet, of course, this matter, we have taken it legally so that it can be dealt with directly. That's how I can account thus far.
Yeah, I think, Comrade Minister, the area of interest or concern for the committee will always be around the stability in the leadership of entities. Because in November 2009, Professor Fitzgerald was appointed as chairperson. Then in December 2010, we have Mr. Sukai is appointed as chairperson. So within 12 months we had changed. Now in relation to the CEO, it is the same thing. I mean, he was appointed 1st February 2010. And this is February 2011. He's on his way out. So I think that is where the point of concern. But can you share with us, Chairperson, exactly what are the challenges? Because then they talk to how then do we appoint people? Because if we appoint people and in less than a year's time we find that there is no suitability, it might as well be in the first instance how were they elected or how were they appointed. But what is the crux of the matter?
Chairperson, the crux of the matter is in a very short space of time that I've been there has been the areas linked to operations. And I cannot move in a situation where the person that is going to supposed to assist the board at a strategic level on operations cannot even move at that particular position. And the other areas are linked to the disclaimer of NSFAS. There's quite a number of issues that, in my view, as the chairperson of the board, should have been dealt with better if the CEO was doing very well in terms of the operation.
But he was only appointed in February 2010, a month before the end of the financial year.
It's 8 months since the disclaimer.
Okay.
And as the board, we were working hard to make sure that we are very shrewd and make sure that we take the issues of the disclaimer very seriously with this current board. It doesn't matter how many months a person has been appointed to that particular position. There has been an inappropriate management of the recovery plan, which is linked to the disclaimer. And in those issues, being appointed with a particular instruction to lead this board, I had to be hands-on and make sure that the board, the CEO or the management of NSFAS led by the CEO, work hand in glove with the strategy that were coming up as the board. I have been challenged with the issues of the compliance of the compliance in terms of the NSFAS Act. So once I find a situation where the act that I'm supposed to make sure that is delivered at NSFAS and these operational issues begin to challenge the act that I'm dealing with, that's the situation. And also broadly the issues of the Public Finance Management Act have been a challenge. Hence, we cannot wait for any moment but to act.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. DG, wanted to say something? No, it's covered. All right. So there we are, comrades. I think we have now a proper explanation. And if the facts are as you're putting them, Chairperson, I'm sure comrades will agree. This is the first time we meet someone who is accountable, who acts firmly and decisively, especially when things are not going according to legislation and regulation. I won't qualify and say that's good, but I'm just saying, the basis on which you acted is what we are lacking. People who act when things are not going the right way, firmly and decisively. But anyway, let's get into the agenda proper. Khush.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will be dealing with the potion on student loan initial measurements of student loans. Chair, I'm sure the report before us, the annual report of the NSFAS, made mention that the Office of the AG could not accurately be able to deal with the issue of fair value adjustment on the basis of information before him. Can you tell us why was it so difficult to give the office of the AG the necessary information related to the fair value adjustment?
Thank you, Chairperson. Much as I responded to many of the questions already, I will take this question directly to the Chairperson of the Audit Committee to help this House to answer specifically the question that is asked by the Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair of the Standing Committee. I'd like to highlight two issues that caused difficulty here. The one relates to the loan management system, which records the loans and has done so for 12 years at NSFAS. In terms of what was paid out to students, what interest was accrued against their loans, and how the repayments from the students were applied. Very late in the audit, it was discovered that this system applies repayments by the students firstly against capital rather than against interest. This is a rule that was written into the system, and that from an accounting perspective and from an ordinary debtor reconciliation perspective is wrong. It in fact favors the students but prejudices the accounting record.
Why did it happen that way?
Chair, we together with the AG have determined that this rule has been there from inception. I can't answer it because I don't know. The second issue has to do with one of calculation of fair value, which is an accounting standard. Fair value is a concept, very simply, which says that when you exchange an asset or a liability between parties, there are three things that have to be present for it to be fair rather than unfair. Number one, the parties must be knowledgeable about what they're doing. In other words, complete information. Secondly, the parties must be willing in the transaction. There must be no party participating in the transaction that doesn't want to. And thirdly, it must be an arm's length transaction. In other words, it's not family business or something between friends. It must be an ordinary business arm's length transaction. The type of business that NSFAS does in terms of its loans only meets one of those criteria, i.e. the parties are willing. The students want the money and NSFAS wants to help them. It's not a knowledgeable transaction. Why? Because NSFAS doesn't know when they lend the money to the students whether the students will graduate. They don't know whether the student one day will find a job. They don't know when the student will reach the threshold of 50,000 rand, which is required before payment is due. So there's not sufficient knowledge at that particular point. The third issue, which I mentioned, an arm's length transaction, is also not present. If you went to a commercial bank for a student loan, you would pay at least, if you got the very best rate from a bank, which is the prime rate, 50% more than what NSFAS lends the money out. If you look at the terms and the conditions of the NSFAS loans, and if you consider the fact that most of the students need help, they don't have people who can stand as guarantors, who can service the interest in the meantime, it is very difficult to calculate what a commercial rate would have been for those particular loans. These factors are not insurmountable. They're not insurmountable. But complicate for an entity like NSFAS how that fair value, which is required by the International Accounting Standard number 39, how to comply with that. And Chair, I can tell you what was done to try and comply, and I can tell you where it went wrong, but maybe that suffices for now.
All right, no, that's fine.
Thanks. I'm sure, Chair, the fact that they do have understanding of what causes this thing, to me, it's an acknowledgement that we lacked, you know, policies that would have been addressing areas that are identified. That therefore, the question will then be, the policy will never be an automatic thing in the institution. There should be an accounting officer which part of his or her work is to create a system amongst other policies, which will then minimize this risk. In this regard, there was no policy. Who was supposed to have been, you know, producing a policy in that regard to deal with the risk that he has been highlighting them?
Chair, the board is the accounting authority and responsible for accounting policy. The organization has applied fair value in its financial statements previously, but not completely. The preparation for compliance with this was begun too late by the accounting officer. And even though the firm that was brought in to do the work believed that the deadline could be met, it was not met.
Yeah, no, that question has been answered. The board is responsible. The accounting officer, that is the CEO, began very late to put the policies together. And the company that was brought in, even though it was late, said it can be done. Of course, they had to say it can be done so they can get a contract. Hush.
Is there any measures that were taken against the accounting officer who failed and led the institution to where it is today?
Chair, part of the preamble to this inquiry this morning dealt with some of that in general. It would be maybe a little harsh pin all of this on the accounting officer in terms of this preparation. There were, however, other significant issues other than the modelling of fair value which impacted severely the preparation of accurate numbers.
I think now it's not answering my question. I'm saying, was there any measures that were taken against the accounting officer who caused the entity to be where it is as we are talking? That's the question.
Yeah, I think comrades, the one element that we may need to recognize is that the person, Mr. Naika, was CEO until July 2009, and Mr. Esop became the acting CEO until February. And then Mr. Seymour became CEO from February 2010. So in one financial year, you had three CEOs. And the one who, until 2 days or 3 days or a week ago, was the CEO was only there for 2 months. Before the end of the financial year. Just saying, that is what has happened.
By the way, I'm sure you would know, Chair, that it is not our baby. They should tell us why that happened. It's not us to tell them. We will never have an answer. Because the system should talk to, you know, retainment of, you know, those things. For us to sit here and want to answer for them, we may find ourselves wanting. Can they then respond themselves? How do they manage 3 in 1 in 12 months?
All right, Chair. I was going to put a rider that I'm not mitigating for them. I was just clarifying the issue. Okay.
Chairperson, immediately the honorable member was asking that question. I was trying to give an indication that... As the board, we really made it a point that these accounting officers really account to the accounting authority, which is the board, and make it a point that all the time we are really making it a point that the changes at NSFAS are helping the organization to grow.
May I just respond to a very specific point the honourable member has asked for. So what did you do, I think, is the question. And then the chair said there were three CEOs. Well, during that term, there was one CFO. That CFO has been demoted.
So, thanks once again. I think we are doing well. Although just the motion alone is not enough, because it should always, you know, whatever measures be consummated with the, you know, the action of a person. You get it. I'm not sure whether they are able to justify how was you know, just the motion alone, in their own opinion, sufficient.
Chair, the CFO is no longer occupying the position of CFO. She has been with the organization for many years, is facilitating in a role of project management with specific responsibilities around those projects. And Mr. Faisal Ali, who is not here for the given reasons today, has been appointed as a CFO and is a suitably qualified individual to occupy that post.
All right. Okay. I think what the comrade was saying was he's not satisfied with the function given. Although I put it as a question to you, are you satisfied that this is the appropriate function that should have been given? But I take it your response will be yes. That's why we gave it. We felt this is enough. And so I would want us to move, because that's what has happened. That's what happened.
I'm not sure. I'm seeing DG raising her hand.
No, it's okay. Continue.
Oh, okay. In conclusion, Chair, of my question, I wanted now to say, in the light of all what you have been saying before, can you convince us that NSFAS has been, you know, discharging its obligation as mandated by the legislation? Because without a fair value adjustment and in recognition, how do you then justify that the people, the students that you have given them money, qualified to have been given money? How do you convince us that people that benefited out of this NSFAS were not just, you know, the children of President Matali and then the Honorable Sahara and President Gotti down there?
Okay. Let me give the chairperson, and then I'll give you this.
Okay. I think Stephen is going to continue to answer that question. He's most relevant in terms of... Stephen.
I thought you are overall relevant.
I think there are two answers to that question. The one is, are we satisfied with the progress to date? The answer is no. The other question is there any misrepresentation of values? The answer is no. Fair value is a accounting presentation standard. It has no relevance to how much money was handed out or recovered. Nothing's changed in the SFAS's business in that way. It's just the way it is presented. Fair value, it could even be argued, is of limited value in terms of this kind of an entity. It is something that is there to protect the public from being given unfair values for organizations that buy and sell instruments in the market, which NISFAS does not do. Thank you.
DJ? Yes, I'll come back to your complaint.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think the questions that are being asked are quite relevant, and they are actually a great lesson. But I think there are some contextual issues within which all these critical challenges actually find themselves. In 2009, after a huge series of complaints from the public, students, and the institutions themselves about how this entity is actually relating to them in giving that proper service, the minister then set up a ministerial review committee to actually look in all the areas of due diligence around this particular matter.
Let's do this, DJ. I'm sensing your line of intervention might be broad and thus encompass everything. Maybe let's deal with all these issues out of context. Then, maybe later, you can then give context. So this is the context within which all this. As of now, we are merely looking at, in a very pointed way, at specific cases and instances. And I think so far their responses have zoned into them and have given clarity on that particular issue. So maybe let's talk to the broader issues later. Comrade Roy, still, Matladi, wow. Are we all talking about the same focus area?
Now we talk about our students, as the minister said. It's a very, very important subject. We can spend the rest of the day maybe talking about
it. No. I don't want us to talk to it in a generic sense. There was a focus area that the Comrade Tobijan was dealing with. So
yes.
If there's a question, yes. It must be related directly to that focus area.
Yes. Comrade Chen, Mark,
okay.
You see, CFOs and CEOs come and go, but models and systems don't. Models and systems are put in place. They don't come and go. And I don't think the nub of Mr. Tobijani's question has been answered. Can you honestly sit there and tell us, indeed you do have a model in place, a system in place that is able now to meet this AS39 requirement? Because when I first read through the annual report, Chair, what went through my mind immediately was they don't have a model. In fact, they don't have a system. And they must be quite honest with us here. Are they going to be able to meet this requirement the next time round? Or are they going to say, yes, we can, just to get off the hook here today? They must be honest with us. I know it would be possible. Is it possible in accountancy perhaps to seek permission from some authority? I don't know. The accountant general, to relax this AS39, maybe, for a year, 18 months, 2 years, until you get your systems in place. But please don't come and tell us now, yes, you have the system, you have the model, when you don't. And then this time around next year, we sit with the same problem, the same disclaimer. That's the first one. Then I want to...
Well, safe to say that that rule was relaxed all along.
Well, do they have do they have the system in place now?
Well,
do they have a model in place? No, I suspect they don't.
That's fine. They'll respond to it. Just
can I get to the next one?
Sure.
Then the Auditor General makes some very specific recommendations. He says you must estimate the fair value now. You must do the exercise now. Has that exercise been done?
Chairperson, I will give the second question to the Chairperson of the Audit Committee. But the first one, in terms of the model and systems of NSFAS, I've already indicated from the beginning that we are there as the board, and we are not saying this to come off the hook in terms of this committee as we are sitting down here. We have spotted the gap in terms of the policies of the organization. And I think when we go into details of the, this report and the disclaimer itself, you'll find that the board is putting together the systems. And going forward, I've got no doubt in my mind that the systems, the model of the systems is in progress.
The answer is no. We are still putting in place the system. They don't have a system yet. They don't have a model yet. It's still being done. It's work in progress.
All right. Yeah.
Chair, if I might answer that question and confirm, that is correct. That is part of the progress around issues that the board is addressing. There is no model. It is now only being put out to tender. The tender will only close now in February for that particular exercise. There are 17 companies that have expressed an interest, three of the top accounting firms in South Africa. Your second question.
So you'll need a firm to come and create and develop the model for
correct,
you.
Correct, sir. The second question was, the AG said we need to estimate fair value now. Has it been done? It cannot be done without the model.
So maybe that's where we should have started. So we have no model. We can't address this question until the model is sorted out. Right, back to square one. Still?
Thank you, Chair. I hope I can move a little bit further along the line of what we need to know about this model, because this really is sort of the nub of what we're doing here today. But, Chair, I have two related issues, but both of them come under one heading, and the question is simply, so what has changed? When I look at the three-year history of audit opinions, for example, 07-08, the student loans area was unqualified. Again, in 08-09, unqualified. Then suddenly in 09-10, it becomes the basis for a disclaimer of opinion. Now, despite the fact that the former CFO has been demoted, the situation has materially changed for the worse over that three-year period. So my question is simply, so what has changed? What caused that abrupt change from being unqualified to suddenly becoming a disclaimer in 09-10. It must be because of personnel, it must be because of systems, it must be because of policy. We can't suddenly assume that the AG woke up one morning and said, okay, this year we're going to slap NSFAS with a disclaimer. Something has changed in the way that this organization has operated. So that's the first issue. The second one goes back to what the chair of audit was talking about in terms of fair value being calculated with open, knowledgeable entities on both sides of the deal, as it were. And the AG highlights in his report the unavailability of pertinent information required to estimate the fair value. Now, I understand that part of the model is, in fact, the determination of actuarial outcomes in relation to the repayment of that loan. And in terms of this model, could we please get some more information as to exactly how that actuarial calculation is being factored into the model? Thank you.
Chair, if I may respond to that. May I place number two first? It's a shorter answer, number one, which I would summarize as, so what happened? It's a slightly longer answer. In terms of the second question around the unavailability of pertinent information, you've struck exactly on the issue. And the issue is that until the loan management system is corrected in terms of how it apportions repayments against interest and capital, no correct values can be calculated for interest income and capital at all, regardless of the model. So that's step number one in terms of the remedial process. Practically, that means NSFAS needs a new loan system. That's the answer there. In terms of question number one, I think the Auditor General did a very good job of summarizing that crisp question, so what has changed? And I'm going to refer to the AG's 5 points on page 13 of their report, which frames what happened. Firstly, the issue we've just been discussing, and I won't go through that again, but management were unsuccessful in producing a valuation model. Page 13 of the Auditor General's report. Under point 27, paragraph 27, not the annual report, the Auditor General's report. And it deals with the reasons for the disclaimer. Oh, they don't have that part. Okay. Well, may I just then relay the points to you. Number one is the model. We've discussed that. Number two, there was a loan book review exercise that was conducted by the organization following the Ministerial Review Committee, which detected that there were values in the book that might be overstated. The minister, before the committee of which I was a member, had even handed in their report, wrote a letter as the executive authority intervening and requesting on the 12th of December that work begun immediately in trying to assess the impact of two legal issues and its impact on the value of the book. The one is prescription, which has to do with the age of the loans, and the other is called the Induplum Rule, which says you can't let interest run on indefinitely against the loan. When it gets to the original capital value, you've got to stop charging interest. This first was not doing that. That request was put to the accounting authority on the 12th of December by the executive authority. The request was that it be done by an independent firm and not be diagnosed by the organization itself. Management chose to do it against that advice themselves. They applied certain key estimates and assumptions which were not verifiable. There were accuracy issues which led to many of the misstatements we have now in the financials for that year. And the lateness of the organization getting down to the exercise impacted severely on the closure in terms of handover to the AG by the end of May. They only produced their final report on the 20th of May. Furthermore, the Audit Committee Chair raised various issues around that exercise in terms of accuracy. Many of them are in the AG's report now. We requested that the Moits, who are the co-sourced internal audit firm, because they did not have it done externally, examine what was done. And many of the issues that were raised there, which are also in the AG's report, were not rectified by management, even though verbal assurances were given. Thirdly, NISFAS has an actuarial model that's been used for years to try and calculate provisions for doubtful debts. It was done by the firm Fifth Quadrant. It was consistently applied year after year. It was a model that had been agreed with the Auditor General's office years ago and took into account things like repayment history, mortality rates, morbidity rates, etc. That model was abandoned by management without a policy decision on that. So that continuity which is required in the fairness of what's represented was lost. And management took a view on the impairment outside of the actuarial model. Fourthly, I've mentioned that the loan system, which has key limitations, which the AG has mentioned, which has impacted both on the provisioning and on the impairments because of the way interest is treated. Lastly, there's been a historic policy at NISFAS for reasons of prudence and being conservative to only recognize interest from student loans when students actually begin to repay. That's fine. And it's conservative, prudent, and all those good things. It does not, however, meet the accounting standard, which says you've got to recognize, this is effectively 72% of their book. Those numbers have to come through your book. You are welcome to adjust them based upon what you think you will actually receive, which is the effective interest rate method. Here again, it was raised by the ministerial committee. I was the one who raised it. It was raised by KPMG, who were brought in. It was raised in the audit committee's commentary during the loan book review that it was still not done. And the view of management of the accounting officer that they were not going to depart from that practice. And so it became a finding. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you for that very informative reply, Chair.
Okay. Atladi?
Chairperson, I do have a follow-up question on the issue of NSFAS not having a model. I'm not going to dwell on the old one that was abandoned. But my question is, how do you run NSFAS without a model? Because I was thinking that that is where you could have started. And what could have caused the delay of the establishment of a model? Who is responsible for establishing the model? I don't want a general answer. I want a specific person whose responsibility it is to see to it that the model exists. And my last question, Chairperson, is pertaining to the question asked by Honorable Tobejani when he asked about satisfaction on the job done. And the answers that were given were the double no. No, we're not satisfied. No, there is no satisfaction along the lines. Now my question is, what measures do you have in place to address the dissatisfaction that you have already reported to SCOPA? Because we'd be interested in knowing that something has been done about it to prevent recurrence of the challenges we have today.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Right.
Add to the first part of that question. What is their turnaround time? When will this model, when will the system be in place?
Okay.
Chair, the question firstly was why was the model delayed, and we were asked for a name. The practice has been on the audit committee that one of the members, who is a director in one of the big firms, in her personal capacity, would pass the financials through the technical department for checking of accuracy around these particular standards. It was reported to the Chief Financial Officer that IAS 39, which is what we're discussing, would become an issue by the end of the 2010 year. And that was sent to the CFO, including Directive 5, by the Accounting Standards Board in terms of GRAP compliance. I met on more than one occasion with the incoming and temporary CEO to discuss what was already then a very worrying audit report and what was going to be done about it. And GRAP readiness was one of those particular issues. I also secured the services of an accountant who is suitably qualified and experienced to advise the organization on this, offered the services by name. Nothing happened. I eventually forced this to the board, and the incoming CEO, being an accountant, spotted the issue and called in KPMG to do a full GRAP review. But it was a case of a lot too late.
What are your turnaround time? What are the time frames?
Chair, the fair value calculation is dependent upon the values that come out of the loan book being correct. We are busy with the due diligence to ascertain the appropriateness of the work that's been put in place, which is Project P008, if you want to make a note of it and ask it again one day. We've got a due diligence around that. I've met with the Auditor General's office, and Deloitte's are busy looking at the appropriateness of that action. We will apply ourselves to try and meet that within the current year. In other words, the 2011 closeout.
End of March.
Yes, but we cannot vouch for that because we are busy with the due diligence around what management have done and its appropriateness to meet that deadline.
That's the calculation. What about the model, the system? Well, when would it be in place?
Chair, the model is, in many cases, in my personal view, an overrated issue. If we were valuing very complicated instruments in the market, like derivatives and so forth, there are models that are used. We are here modeling a simple instrument, in other words, a loan between two parties. What does make it a little bit more complicated are the leniency factors. Okay. We don't have to have a perfect model either on day one.
Well,
the model...
No. The issue is not whether it is perfect or not, complicated or simple. Whatever it's going to be, what are your time frames?
The time frame set for the organization is to meet this financial year end.
Okay.
That's the time frame.
All right. No. Mangen.
Just a clarity question.
No, just a
minute. Financial year, does that mean next month?
Yes.
Sorry, Chair, if I may just add to that, the deadline for handing in the financials is the end of May.
But the year ends in March.
Sorry, the closeout is end of March. The PFMA stipulates that those financials have to be handed over to the Auditor General by the end of May.
So what you're saying is that by the time you hand over your financials to the Auditor General in May, you should have sorted out these issues.
We have directed them to sort it out, sir.
Right. No. We just wanted to be clear, because if you say, you know, year end, to us it's March. You see. So we just wanted to be clear. Whatever the date that you have set for ourselves, we just wanted to know that this is the time frame that you have set for ourselves. Mangen, I say you're fine. Chulwan. And then Singh, and then we move. Or maybe let me keep Singh out. When I come back to you, you ask your question and then you continue with your focus early. Right? Singh?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the question by Honorable Masadi, the first question, who is responsible, hasn't been answered. Because, you know, we've got a new chairman who's coming in February, very enthusiastic, in December. The first meeting was sometime in February. Very enthusiastic, lots of ideas, already clashing with the CEO. There's difference of opinion on the way forward. But there's been a board. And if I look on page 56 here, most of the members of the board were there for the past 2 years. So during the year under review, there were board members. And then the board here in the first line of their report says, the board accepts that it is ultimately accountable and responsible for the performance and affairs of NSFAS. Now, we have this new chairman, but what has happened to the last board? What did they do? I mean, there were board members that are overlapping between the last few years and that are there now. And this turnaround strategy, I mean, there are systems that are so entrenched in NSFAS that it's like turning around the Titanic. So I don't know whether they can meet this deadline of March or May. I mean, if they can do it, it'll be a miracle. It'll be the first time a public entity has been able to turn things around. And I think, Chair, we all realize how important NSFAS is. for the students out there. But then we are concerned with proper management of NASFAS. I mean, that is the point that we want to, assurance that we want to get from the gentlemen and ladies.
Did you want to come to that?
Just on that point, it is correct that there has been a board, and with that board, there has been an engagement around these issues. The first very intense one, where the minister outlined the issues of due diligence exercise and the recovery plan, was in July 2010, after all these issues were actually picked up. And in September 2010, we then went to a workshop in actually assessing as to how the processes have actually moved.
All right. That's fine. So the point was to say the board should play the role it's supposed to play, which it was not playing.
I just want to finalize this question of the board in a minute.
All right.
Then there, we picked up that there were quite a number of areas around the risks and the vulnerabilities that have been identified. We then set a time frame and a progress by December. And in December, I think it was the 9th, we met again to look at these questions. And we found that quite a number of things have been actually been executed. And in that engagement, quite a number of board members offered to resign voluntarily. And we moved on.
Failing to discharge their responsibility.
Yes, we moved on then to fill the vacancies. After which, when this board came in, we met with them on the 7th of January. And we gave the time frame of 3 months turnaround. And I'm expecting a report, the preliminary report, on the 28th of February, and they will come with a substantial one at the end of March, and we'll take it from there. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, I'd like to add that at the May board meeting, 2010 May board meeting, after the financial statements were presented to the board prior to being handed over to the Auditor General, the then chairperson of the Finance Committee requested a closed session of the board at which, as board members, we expressed our concern about the fact that the issues identified in the financials, and we were aware at the time that NSFAS was not able to comply with IAS 39 and GRAT 9, that these issues had been raised consistently at Finance Committee and at Audit Committee level in the prior year, and that we found ourselves in a situation where we now find that these issues have not been addressed. Subsequent to that meeting, the Audit Committee convened a full Saturday workshop with members of senior management to speak to all the issues, to identify a turnaround plan, to engage with management on that turnaround plan, and to ensure through a tracking and monitoring mechanism that there was progress on that.
Okay.
In October last year, the chair of the audit committee, the former chair and myself met with the CEO and pointed out to him that we were running out of time and that we were not happy with progress. So the board was, certain members of the board and specific board committees were doing their utmost to get progress on these issues, but we were consistently being frustrated by management not giving us assurances and not delivering on those assurances.
Thank you, Kumbhu Chilwan. And you will then take us to the second focus as well.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I'm covered on the issues that I wanted to raise. I'll just run straight to my focus area, which is the revenue from exchange transactions and interest income on student loans. The AG signed that the set standard of GRAT 9
regarding revenue exchange transactions were not applied, therefore which has resulted in the student loans being misstated to the tune of 565.6 million, which is the one factor that contributes to the disclaim. I think in my own understanding that this gap commenced on the 1st April 2009 for Nexus. And I think the CEO, who is not here, and the CFO were aware that this technical standard was being phased out. But one question one would just want to understand that why did Nexus did not comply with GRAP 9?
Chair, the answer was a very deliberate decision. It relates to an answer I gave earlier around the way NSFAS historically recognized interest from loans. They only included them in the financials when students began repaying. GRAP 9 requires recognition over the entire term of the loan from the time it is granted. So even though the cash flows in the early part of the loan's life are not there, they have to make an adjustment for that. But it's got to come through the books. The matter was raised by the Ministerial Review Committee. The matter has been raised by the internal auditors. It was raised by KPMG in their GRAP review in time for them to make that presentation decision. And management stuck with the view that they were not going to do so. The net effect, however, in terms of real money, is not a material issue at all. It's a presentation issue rather than a cash flow issue. Thank you.
Yeah, no, we are aware of that.
Maybe just to get a further clarity on that. Probably that's the reason that has made the board to suspend the CEO. That could be the other reason. Maybe just to get a clarity on that one. Sure.
So the board has not suspended the CEO, but there were several deliberate decisions taken during that period which were unacceptable.
I see that maybe we asking forward questions, I don't know. But in regard to that, Chair, I just want to understand, why did Nexus choose to recognize interest on student loans only when repayments start, not over the term of the loan? Is it problem of a systematic or model or what? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the responsibility of management and the accounting officer to the accounting authority, they need to fairly represent what's going on. Fairness does require judgment. Judgment has to be mitigated through policy, so there's a framework within which you make judgments. In terms of the real flow of money, it is a reasonable thing to say, well, we don't know when a student is going to graduate or if they're going to graduate. And in terms of the NSFAS loans, which don't say when you graduate you must repay or when you leave university you must repay, it says when you leave or graduate, find work and earn $30,000 a year, then you can repay. That makes it very difficult to work out when that's going to happen. And for reasons of being careful, the organization therefore said, well, when you start to repay, we will treat the interest income as money that we know we're going to receive. Not before. Because of all these unknown factors, which are not there with the bank.
All right. Okay. Let's leave it at that, because, I mean, that explanation, I'm sure that's what you gave the Auditor General, and still he made that finding. So it does not serve much purpose to repeat it to us, because we're not going to come to a different finding from what the Auditor General has done. But we hear you, and we hear what you said.
Yeah, sure, I agree with you. I just want to find out, are there any regulations in terms of the loans that are being provided for to students? Or you just, there's money, you apply, you get any piece of regulation that NSFAS would follow in terms of allocating monies or those bursaries to the students?
May I answer that? NSFAS applies the terms and conditions to its loans. Students are considered eligible in terms of an NSFAS loan if they meet the requirements of a means test. The loans are income contingent, so as the chair of the audit committee has explained, they are not paid immediately on exit from the university, but only when the student is earning enough income to start repaying. So there are a number of terms and conditions that apply to NSFAS loans.
The means test, how do you ensure accuracy?
This is a challenge for NSFAS because, as you are aware, the NSFAS has a head office but does not have a presence of its own on the campuses where loans are granted. Loans are administered by the universities and by the financial aid officers that work for the universities.
So essentially you're not sure whether the means test is actually properly applied or not.
NSFAS is audited in terms of the application of the means test. The Ministerial Review Committee pointed to a number of weaknesses and flaws in that system, and our view as the board is that this needs a very thorough review. The means test has been in place throughout the existence of NSFAS since it was established in terms of the Act in 1999, but even before through its predecessor, TEFSA. The Ministerial Review Committee, which delivered its report in January 2010, recommended that there must be a thoroughgoing review because it's very clear that it needs updating.
12 months down the line, has that review been done?
No.
Chairperson, still on that question, according to my understanding, of the explanation is that you deal with the requirements and the means, an assessment means of a student. So it means, actually, I just wanted to check, is there a framework policy or is there a part of regulation just to understand where maybe you refer to as part of that requirement, because it can't be just a requirement. It should come from someone. I just wanted to check that you have it in place.
Is it my correct understanding that NSFAS gives money to universities, and the universities are the ones who do the actual disbursement?
That's a correct understanding. Money is allocated from NSFAS to the universities, and the universities then are the agents of NSFAS, if you like, in identifying the eligible students, applying the means test, and doing the administration around the granting of the loans.
So NSFAS does not have a risk assessment or management process around these monies. They give them to universities and then universities handle them, process them.
So that's where now the issues around the problem with the means test comes in, because it is not centrally applied, and yes, ma'am.
Chairperson, if I may just clarify, institutions are awarded an allocation, an indicative amount, on the basis of claims submitted by the institution after having conducted a means test on a student. A loan agreement form is compiled by the institution's financial aid officer, who is acting in his capacity as an agent of NSFAS.
Can I just check? So the university submits
the loan agreement form, and the money is transferred to the university
What I'm trying to check is that the University of Limpopo, if they submit 200 forms, you allocate the money in accordance with that number of forms, or do you predetermine that for this financial year, University of Limpopo, this is your budget, whatever claims you submit, they should not be outside this budget, or how does that actually happen?
Chairperson, the board at the beginning of the year, based on the allocation from Treasury, as well as the amount available in terms of recovered funds, makes an allocation to institutions. This is an indicative amount. Within the institution of NSFAS, as claims come in the past we have, and it is a feature of many discussions, there was always unallocated funds. As of 2009, the department began monitoring quite closely unutilized funds and began shifting it amongst institutions in order to address the issue of money following need. So it is correct that the university has a specific amount in terms of its allocation, but there is a process during the year for recovered funds to be redistributed amongst institutions to make more money available.
Can we get a document that indicates the indicative amount allocated to the various universities?
Yes, we can make that available.
All right. Tombi, we should follow that one up. Yes, was that all you wanted to say? All right, let's leave it at that.
Yeah. Sorry, Chairperson. Yeah. I was just going to say that we have a debt management policy as well as a loan book manual, and both of these which govern and guide the process of awarding loans, the manner in which the means test should be computed, and the extent of the maximum amount of loan, the loan amount that a student can receive, with the provision for extra should a particular course be more expensive.
Okay. All right. Just hold it still. I'll come to you. Just wanted to.
Yeah. Chairperson, thank you for the response. Now I understand. But, you know, it's just that it's unfortunate because as a public accounts committee, we come at the tail end. One would wish maybe if I was in the portfolio committee for higher education, probably it will be. But I think it's relevant that I raise it as a public representative.
Where is the chairperson of the portfolio committee? Pretoria, where is Malan?
Why ask Pretoria?
Okay, continue. Yeah, so I think Honorable Ainsley is right. You should be asking me actually, because you know that the chairperson of higher learning was the one who was dealing with specifically on group two with Department of Education. But I wanted to say, since the minister is here, I wanted to say, you see, in terms of the background of the previously disadvantaged people, the way that you are explaining how the funds are being allocated to universities, I think the minister has once alluded on that one. You transfer funds to universities, but at the same time, these universities, they've got their own certain rules on how they admit pupils or students into the universities, which put more they're disadvantaged to access those funds. I think maybe the minister is just hearing what I'm trying to say. I'm saying, Chair, it was going to be more appropriate if it was a portfolio on higher education. But I think, as I'm saying, I'm a member of parliament. I have the right to MIV. I'll find some time to join them when they're coordinating. Yeah, Chair, the next question that I wanted to ask. Yeah, I'm about to finish, Honourable Steve. Honourable, give me some time, please. Yeah, I wanted to check that this entity, what is it that you're going to do about this understated interest? Or maybe you're going to ask for Treasury to condone it, like it happens with other entities, or because it will always recur. I mean, even in the next current this current financial year, it will. What are you going to do about this amount? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the interest issue is a presentation issue. And so the presentation of it has to be corrected. It has a net null effect in terms of the real money.
I think you are repeating that point, and I'll repeat, we're aware of that. But fact is, that presentation, yes, it needs to be changed.
Correct.
Is it going to be changed?
It will be changed. It has to be changed.
Okay. I think that's the point. All right. Done? No.
Just two questions.
All right.
Okay. I was off sick, but it took me a week to prepare. So now you're bothering me. I've got the floor. Now you're asking me. It's my time, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Chair, if a question related to audit committee. On page 58 of the annual report, which is an audit committee report, the very first paragraph, I think we are being informed that the audit committee has brought them in line with the latest King report. And the committee now has a responsibility to assist the board in the monitoring of the integrated financial reporting. Did the audit committee ever raise with the board or with the management on the matter of non-compliance, both with Draft 9 and the IAS 9 reporting standards?
Cheers. Chair, the matter was raised following the GRAP review in terms of the specific GRAP areas of non-compliance. A full review was requested by the Audit Committee across all GRAP standards. There were minor issues and there were major issues. Those major issues were highlighted, of which these two, which you are querying us on, were identified as major issues. The Audit Committee also recommended that the Board receive training in the new King 3 standards last year and has amended its own charter and that of the internal audit charter to incorporate the King 3 standards.
Chair, on page 36, of the annual report again, there's a combined total for both external and internal audit fees, which is almost 3.5 million. Just want to check if these well-paid consultants have they advised the entity against non-compliance, which has led to this disclaimer. Have you received the value for money for this payment?
Chair, in the period under review, most of the internal audit expenses related to the institution, the audit of institutions by PricewaterhouseCoopers. The audit was put out to tender and rotated by the audit committee, and Deloitte's were appointed, and they have, for a very similar amount, we're focusing on risk now, not on a circular audit of all institutions all the time, which was the practice previously, and they have, since their appointment, completed no less than 13 internal audit studies, of which 5 have been done during the 2011 year.
Chairperson, that will be my last question, this one that I'm going to ask. This basis of the disclaimer, it's mainly originate from non-compliance or inter alia dependent. Can the board, I'd like the chairperson of the board to give us an assurance that this vital entity will again regain and go back to where it used to be in the previous years in terms of the audit outcomes. Thank you, Chair.
Certainly, the chairperson, I can assure the honourable members that as the board, the reason why we are there, we want to regain stability of NSFAS.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chilwa. Mangena, Matladi, and then we'll give Steel, and when you are done, Steel, you'll then. Comrade Roy, and then Steel. And then you then go into your focus area.
Chairperson, thank you. I wouldn't like to ask a question, but what I want to do is to recommend to the department, maybe asking actually on top of that why don't the department have a centralized office whereby students themselves will apply rather than applying to universities? Because I'm telling you, even now, if you go to Tesla, you're still
finding.
Yeah, I'm telling them that on Friday when I passed Teflo, the NASA's office, there were still queues and queues of students, and I'm asking myself, when are they going into class? And I've read from the ministry report of the Ministerial Committee on the Review of the National NASA Fund. There's a student who has written a letter to the third institution to say that you cannot really, I mean, somebody traveling from Balfour going to Johannesburg, it's very far, and coming from a poor family, it becomes a problem. If that was centralized, by the time the schools, the universities reopen, the department will be able to say to this institution, at least we are going to allocate so much, but here are the names of the students that are going to be admitted. And then it won't be a problem because they'll send a letter to say that admit these students and then we'll forward you the funds. I think that will be easier, like other institutions are doing, I mean private ones, where they send the names and thereafter they send the funds. Thank you.
All right. Gladys.
I've got two quick ones. The first one is to check on the monitoring system of NSFAS for institutions that are receiving the NSFAS funds. Because we can't just pump money into universities not following up how it is used and what's happening to it.
Matlazi, why don't I allow you to come after Steve?
Oh, may I just leave it then, that one? You might not answer it.
No. I'll give you to ask that question. No, they must answer it. All I'm saying is that it is a general question.
All right.
So I want him to finish his focus area. Then if there are general questions, then you'll be the first to ask and then they'll respond to it.
There is another one specific.
Specific?
Yeah.
Okay.
The specific one, when I leave this one for now, is when Honorable Chilwane was asking the question about the CFO if the CFO was suspended because of blah, blah? The answer was no, it's not suspended. Now, I want to find out, what is it, what do we call the process that is happening to the CFO? What CEO, and then what law are we following by just putting him home, not coming close to the work, not being here, not doing his work? And then what procedure is it? Because as we leave this boardroom, we must be able to say what's going on in NSFAS, and then what about the CEO? Otherwise, we would be going out with that idea of suspension, which you say is not. What is it? Can you explain it to us?
Chairperson, the CEO is not at home. He's at work. I think I clarify in terms of us as the board interacted with all the stakeholders of NSFAS. We indicated earlier on that every time we deal with very specific issues on operations, undermining the earth, and all those things, so we are engaging, and he has agreed to leave NSFAS. The process that we're involved in is how he leaves NSFAS.
Okay. Comrades. Let's keep it simple. First of the matter is that the CEO and the board have agreed on termination of the services. I suppose what they're negotiating is a golden handshake or. Okay. I mean, the issue obviously will revolve around how much do you pay me for terminating my service. It can't be any other thing. So, I think the only factor that is a little grayish is why he's not here to come and account, and yet he's in his office working, if that is true. I mean, it just does not make sense. Unless it might be that he would give a different version to some of the things that you are labeling on him. And he didn't want to come here and create a drama. Because he's not here. All things that he did not do this, he did not comply, he was defiant, he didn't do this. Maybe if he was here, he would put a different spin to it. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Because you are negotiating the termination of the services.
The chairperson of the board has given us an assurance that there will be no disclaimer this time next year. In order to achieve that, the Auditor General, when he briefed us on this item of interest, said three specific things had to be done to overcome this particular obstacle to a clean audit. And I want to know if these have been done, if not, when you intend doing them. The first is that your accounting policy with regard to interest must be brought in line with Graph 9. Has that been done? Is your policy now in line with that? When your policy is in line, then a retrospective adjustment must be made to your books. Has that been done? When you've done that, then your accounting records, your financial statements, must be adjusted accordingly. So on this item, those very three specific things, have they been done? If not, when will they be done? Because if they are not done, on this item, we will again have a qualification.
Chair, part of the way to getting out of a disclaimer is correctly diagnosing the order in which things have to be done. So my direct answer to that question in terms of applying Grap 9 and the adjustment, the answer is yes. That has to be done. The remedial step that precedes all of that is that the loan book system needs to be replaced. There's an intermediate step that management have looked at and have implemented in the meantime until such time as the loan book is replaced, the system is replaced. As part of our due diligence, we are assessing as a board the appropriateness of that action to be able to meet audit standards together with the AG and the internal auditors around a data analytic standard. That is part of the due diligence process. Until that is resolved, you cannot apply those standards.
Well, your responsibility is to resolve those so that the standards can be applied. Right. Nothing. Let me give Steele so we can go to the last part. Looks like we will uncharacteristically have an early day today. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to start with the follow-up question that I wanted to ask relating to the issue of the means test which you introduced and Honourable Chulwani carried on. And I'm particularly concerned with the monitoring of the means test information and the verification of that data. The ministerial review actually highlights in paragraph 2.2.5 the concerted efforts of an apparently large proportion of students at many institutions to provide false information to appear as poor as possible in order to qualify for financial aid. That's in the report. Now, what I want to know is who is verifying that the data that students submit is actually accurate. Otherwise, we are granting funds to undeserving students and we are depriving deserving students of the funds that they desperately need. So I want to know the verification process that NSFAS has in place or has in mind to stop exactly this kind of fraud.
Thank you very much. This particular area is, of course, one fraught with potholes because we are reliant on the financial aid office at a particular institution to verify the information that is required. In order to actually be granted the NSFAS loan, there is a process of substantial documentation that the students have to provide in order to demonstrate.
Earlier on, we said there is no verification process done by NSFAS because you give the money to the universities. And that in one of your review reports, that was identified as a weakness that needs to be reviewed. And that review has not yet been done. Isn't it?
The review of the means test has not been done,
yeah.
But we do rely on the fact that all our institutions that are allocated funds are subjected to audits, ongoing audits, and on the basis of the audit reports which are provided.
No. I mean, if that was the case, and if that was a safeguard, then we would not have had the recommendation that says the means test and the way it is being applied is a risk area. So let's move from the basis that it's a risk area that needs to be reviewed, and that review has not yet been done. So in relation to his question, there will be no answer to that question because the review has not yet been done. So it is an area of risk in terms of the allocation of funds to students. Can you move to your next question?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. As long as the secretariat are noting that area of risk as being one turned to this committee and one which we will expect to hear a report in future on how this is actually being dealt with. Thank you. If I could go then to the focus area, the impairment of student loans. Chair, I note on page 22 that the quantum that we're talking about here is 2.68 billion rand. This
with the impairment of student loans amount. And I'd just like to quote from a comment in Accountancy SA on the impairment of debtors, in this case it would be the student loans. The impairment of debtors is traditionally recognized by creating a provision for doubtful debt. The principles of IAS 39, which we've already heard about, must be applied. In accordance with these principles, a loss due to impairment must be recognized if there is objective evidence of the impairment, for example, the non-payment by debtors. Now, Chair, my question is in relation to this 2.6 billion impairment of student loans, what was the, in the words of Accountant TSA, the objective evidence that actually formed the basis of this decision?
Chair, the impairment number was informed by the loan book review. The instruction was that it should quantify overstatement regarding relating to two legal issues. However, that particular exercise was expanded by management to include what I would call evaluation of the book in general. I mentioned earlier that NISFAS has for years been using a provisioning model put together by actuaries for the quadrant in this instance. We asked because the exercise was not done independently outside, which would have assisted with the objective analysis, that given that the co-sourced internal auditors, Deloitte, examined the work done and the worksheets. It is now a matter of fact and recorded in the Auditor General's report that the assumptions used by management to arrive at the 2.68 billion were not substantiated. We don't have a suitable answer other than the one that I can give you that management gave me themselves, and that was that we didn't have time to do that.
All right. Good.
Sorry, can I just get this in the terms that I understand? When we are told that these assumptions were not substantiated, does this mean, in terms of the question that I asked, that no objective evidence was actually produced by management to support this impairment? Is that actually what we're being told?
Chair, the honourable member is correct. There were no auditable source documents, policies in place to substantiate the percentages that the accounting officer used to value the book.
Okay. Which leads me then to the question, Chair, of whether anybody should be held responsible for this particular deviation from accounting practices.
Sir? Chair, the answer most certainly is yes.
Was anyone held accountable for that? I would like the chairperson to answer this. This is a political question, political in the context of your structure. It's not a technical question.
Chairperson,
full yes or no?
No, we are in progress to follow up all these trends.
But who was responsible for this particular aspect that we're talking about now? Was it the CEO? Was it the CFO?
Chair, if I may.
You just said management, but who within management?
Chair, if I may respond by referring to the PFMA in terms of responsibility.
All right. So, okay, no, that's fine. So that's the accounting office. So, Chairperson, if you say we're following up on these things and yet we're negotiating an exit package for the CEO, I mean, what follow-ups are there in terms of holding anybody accountable?
There is a multi-process approach in the manner in which we're dealing with these things. You will understand that at the time that we're dealing with these things, very focused, is very limited, and that is why it didn't come from me in terms of whether we have golden handshake. I didn't say that. So all these things were following up very closely.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, Chair, this is clearly a totally unsatisfactory situation. We have an admitted deviation from accounting principles. Information was not correctly, decisions were based on incorrect information or inadequate information, and it appears that we now have two contradictory processes, negotiation for a termination package at the same time that somebody should or should not be held accountable. I just don't see how these two ends of the spectrum are going to be brought together. Either the accounting officer must be held accountable or not. And if he's going to be held accountable, then you don't negotiate a termination package. So please, could the chairman of the board explain this contradiction?
In terms of this report, as the board will be making anyone accountable for anything.
But this report was released in September last year, so you have not yet made a determination in terms of who is to be held accountable for these shortcomings or deviations. I mean, that's very generic. But it's fine. I would want you to continue.
Chair, I presume the same explanation will then apply to paragraph 10 of the AG's report, where the interest which accrued $589 million was written off and the entity could not provide, again, reliable evidence in support of this write-off. What this basically amounts is that $589 million was just written off the books. And presumably without any kind of, again, of objective basis for a decision. So is this also included in the things for which somebody will or won't be held accountable?
Chair, if I may, the 589 refers not only to amounts written off under discretion, but students who actually were repaying and were impaired, which is a different matter and a more severe matter. In other words, these students were paying, and they were included in the impairment.
Yeah. Beyond that statement, then still question in terms of accountability. Is this part of the elements or issues for which people will or will not be held accountable? Management will or will not be held accountable.
I need to get clarity on the answer that has just been given. Does this mean that these students that were written off, they were paying, and then all of a sudden they got a bond seller and somebody said, okay, now we're going to write off your debts as well? That's what it sounds like to me.
Chair, no, nothing has changed in terms of the cash flows. There's no write off of the loan and anybody being told you no longer have to repay. It was a judgment of reasonability in terms of the answer of management based upon the age of the loan and how long it had been in existence and therefore was impaired.
But what was the practical implication of that decision?
The practical implication is that if the money actually comes in, it gets written back.
Just clarify that last part so that we don't have a
a different understanding.
They have to reverse the entry now. That's the answer. They need to reverse this. It's wrong. If one impairs and then there is actually performance thereafter under the loan, that adjustment is made in the financial statements of the entity.
Okay. That sounds to me like providing some comfort that this error will at least be addressed and, where necessary, reversed. Good. I'm nodding here is what I want to see, Chair. Thank you very much. Can we move then to paragraph 13? This seems to me, Chair, to be a straightforward bookkeeping problem. 42 million rand. The appropriate audit evidence could not be provided to support the reconciliation between the loans in the general ledger and the student loans in the subsystem, where they're managed on a daily basis. Now, if this is a simple bookkeeping systems error, what is being done to address it? And again, who is accountable for this particular error having happened in the first place? It sounds to me like accounting 101, but I'll be reassured.
Chair, if I may, ideally the loan system should be integrated into the accounting system so that this problem doesn't occur at all. The one should talk to the other. Because this is an old system, it doesn't do that in full. What needs to be done is a debtor's reconciliation against the loan system, and we are now on a bi-monthly cycle that all these amounts have to be done and signed off. What was happening previously is it wasn't being done timelessly. It was being done in a rush at year end, and that's how this error occurred.
Getting there, Chair. I'm just making a note of this. So it was only done at year end, whereas it should have been done by monthly. Is that the bottom line?
Chair, it should be done automatically, and it should be done monthly, if not automatically. They are now up to a bi-monthly cycle. We need to get them to a monthly cycle.
Okay. Good. So we're moving in the right direction on that one, too.
Honourable
Angsty is being decidedly negative today, but I'm
trying. May not be. But I will.
Okay, sure. All right.
Chair, I want to move just to a sort of general wrap-up question at the end. And as an introduction to the question, I'm concerned to note that on page 24, it indicates that NSFAS now receives no foreign donor funding whatsoever. This is now completely dried up. And that suggests that there is a measure of, shall we say, credibility problem with the fund. And I would also like to then highlight the point made in the ministerial review, which comments that when it comes to loan recovery, NSFAS has the second lowest recovery ratio globally among student financial aid, and if they were to comply with the National Credit Act, they would probably be the lowest in the world by a significant margin. Now, Chair, this speaks to a fund which has not only a management crisis, but it has a crisis of credibility. And I'd really like this committee to be assured that the board take these comments to heart and that they are striving to be better than the second lowest in the world.
Chairperson, I'd like to respond to specifically the question of
I'm trying to look at the my committee clerks here, whether they're paying or not. If they are not paying you, you can talk to them before you leave.
Okay. Chairperson, I'd like to respond to the first part of the Honourable Member's question.
relating to international donor funding. International donor funding that was received in the past was specifically part of a bilateral donor agreement from the Irish government. Island aid money was made available for higher education in South Africa specifically. In 2005, there was a review on the part of the Irish government in terms of their priorities, and they made a decision that South Africa was no longer a focus area in terms of higher education, and that related to all the donor funding to all development aid organizations in South Africa. It was not related to NSFAS.
Well, they
came later, Chair.
Okay, Comrade Roy?
No, you see, I want to get back to Mr. Steele's earlier question. Mr. Smith said it was a rush. If these things had been done monthly, we wouldn't have got this qualification. But that's not what the Auditor General says in the notes that I have. Again, the Auditor General points to systems not being in place. If you had all the time in the world, you see, if you don't have a system in place, you're still not going to get it right. And the Auditor General, very specifically in the notes, in our briefing notes, says you do not have the financial systems in place to facilitate this kind of record keeping. That is specifically the system that is utilized for student loans has limitations that do not support adequate reporting in terms of the accounting framework. So you can't do it. It's not a question of time. Auditor General says you don't have a system in place. Are you correcting the system? Then you can give yourselves all the time in the world to get it right.
Chair, the Honourable Member is absolutely accurate in his observation. And I did say earlier, NSFAS needs a new loan system. That is step number one.
Right. Pretorius, I'll come back to you.
Chair, I want to get to the general part. Can I do it now?
Yeah. No. Go to the general part. Seeing Tobizan, Matadi, and then we. While I leave. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just also my concern about the fact that the current CEO is not present here today. I think it would have been a much better meeting, balanced meeting, if the CEO was also here to at least hear his side of the story. I just get the impression that the current CEO has almost made the fall guy now for things which happened even before his time. And I don't know Mr. Seymour at all. I've never met him. I'm just saying this. There's a long history in this place of mismanagement, bad management, non-performance. There was Mr. Naika and Mr. Essop as well. Mr. Naika resigned, presumably not in the employ anymore. Mr. Essop, perhaps he still works for the entity. If so, then I would have liked Mr. Essop to be present to account for what happened in his term. Having said that, though, can I remark that the annual report, I feel, is rather skimpy when it comes to HR-related matters. I'm trying to find information about disciplinary action against staff members. Obviously, if you look at the history of this entity, they had a disclaimer this year, but previously there were also non-compliance issues which directly relate to management not doing their jobs. Now, my question is, where can I find information on what type of disciplinary action has been taken or was taken in the past against non-performance? We've heard about from Mr. Smith about the acting or the previous CFO was demoted, and that's commendable if she did not perform. But certainly there must have been other members of staff who did not perform as well. What was done in those cases? Where can one find that information? The second question relates to the issue that we've already touched upon, and that's the possible golden handshake that somebody's seeing in the end of the tunnel. And I would want to urge that a person who's worked for a company for 1 year, and I presume it's got a 5-year contract, maybe somebody can just confirm that, 3 or 5 years contract. You're looking at big bucks. He's earning 1.2 million per annum, if my calculations are correct. So you're looking at another 4.8 million, perhaps, which is outstanding if it's a 5-year term. And I want to urge the entity to seriously err on the side of conservatism when it comes to negotiations there. My second question, sir, if I might carry on.
Well, that's not your third.
I'm getting to my second one now. My second one relates to page 36 of the report. It relates to the administrative expenses of the past financial year, and there's a large increase from 1.4 million to 7.4 million under the heading Broader Communication Strategy. And the footnote says that they embarked on a substantial radio communication campaign. Now, my question is, did they get value for money by doing that? The way I read the documents, there's not enough funds in any case for the demand for student loans. Why is it necessary to advertise your services that wide by spending another, 6-7 million rand extra on a radio communication campaign while the current funds you have are inadequate to service your current clientele? I will stop at that, sir. Thank you.
All right. Well, unfortunately, the minister needs to leave. It is by arrangement that there is some engagement that requires his attention elsewhere. But we still want to thank you, Comrade Minister, for having made time. I'm sure by now you have a sense of the areas and the issues around which the comrades here have concerns that require attention by management, by the board, certainly by yourself, in terms of ensuring that this entity is able to fulfill its legislative mandate. So I'll give you an opportunity to talk to some of the issues that you might have picked up, to clarify certain issues, and of course to emphasize that the issue is not to understand the entity, but to change it.
I can hear you very clear, Chairperson, what you say. Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Members. Thanks also for your understanding. Because the original plan was that I was going to sit here until we finish, but the Cabinet cluster briefing to the media about what the President said, so I can't cut myself into two, unfortunately. But you are right already in terms of what I have listened to. I must express appreciation on the fact that there are quite a number of things that clearly require attention, many of which we've thought about, but others not in the manner in which they've been raised by some of the members, which I think is something that we must appreciate. But also, Chairperson, I think that it would be improper if I also do not thank the members of the board. You know, some of them have been there a little bit, but others are new. Given the nature of the challenge, I'm not so sure if I was approached to sit on the board of NSFAS at the time at which I approached them, I would have easily said yes. But one must appreciate the fact that they've really been willing. And Steve also has been providing critical continuity, you know, to actually come and serve this organization as part of service to the country. I think that, very briefly, what I need to say is that, in a way, the Auditor General's report vindicated what we had already picked up through the Ministerial Review Committee. And at least it found us in a position to be able to even have done some of the things that we've asked the board to do now, because we could actually better anticipate that out of the Review Committee. I really think that the Review Committee in many ways even set the scene for some of the things to actually come into the open. For example, the number of issues, I don't want to talk to all of them, but the issue of the loan book was picked up by the Review Committee first, before anybody else, to actually say there is something wrong here, and we had begun to also look into other things. I'm not going to go into other things that perhaps we will need to engage around in future. Because the crux of the matter, what we are dealing with in many ways are a manifestation or a consequence of one simple fact. That we've grown nefas, but capacity lags behind. Because government has really put in a lot of money to actually assist poor students, but capacity lagged behind. Something that is not abnormal in a number of instances. Like now, we've grown the higher education sector by 50% since 1994, if not more. But in the meantime, a huge black backlog in accommodation is built up, for instance. So it's not dissimilar. In a way, that is why one of the terms of reference for the review committee, which unfortunately they didn't get around to look into that in detail, was whether actually don't we need a student bank? Because NSFAS is not only that little spaza type TEFSA, you know, that we had. It's a serious operation. But capacity has lagged behind. And the review committee, in any case, did identify that. And I had appointed the review committee because even at the handover by the Minister of Education, there were processes that we started to actually raise these particular matters. I think that maybe very quickly on some of the issues that have been raised, the broader one. I said this growth has actually outstripped NSFAS capacity. I think that the issue has been addressed. I'm quite satisfied about the need for a new loan system. But there's another matter there, or a whole lot of matters. NSFAS at the moment starts charging you interest at the point when you get given the loan, during first year, your first week after signing. So by the time you finish your three-year degree, we are accumulating interest. Many other countries, they only start charging interest 6 months after you've completed your degree. So those are some of the issues that we are, for instance, looking at as a matter of urgency, because they are somehow punitive in terms of how we support poor students. The issue of the means test also is something we are looking at, but this is a matter that government, together with everyone, needs to look at. Means test at the moment is 122,000 rands per annum, family income. You earn beyond that, you don't qualify for NSFAS. The political issue that we'll have to continue to look into, because if you raise that, say, to 130,000, it has its own complications. Yet people who are earning 130,000 per annum still can't afford to send their children to university. And also it doesn't take into account what happens if you've got two students at university, a family that's earning 150,000. So all those are matters, by the way, Chair, that we are looking at. I know that this may not be like public accounts. They are broader political issues that we would like to engage around, because they have got implications in terms of what we need to do. I must say I take your point about risk assessment on loans. It's something that we have to dig deeper, although, as it has been reported by the board, we've actually started into this. Because I am really even more worried now that you raise this, because we pick up here and there instances of also fraud. No, I can't give you something concrete, but there are lots of allegations that come across students who do not qualify, but they are able to buy themselves into university loans. We will have to go into that very seriously, and we are going to act where we actually find or are able to prove such instances. The other matter, Chair, which we also have been dealing with, in fact, is one of the key recommendations of the review committee, which you are also raising, is that, yes, money should follow the student. Ideally, that's what we need to do. Whether at this point in time, we need central applications or not, it's a matter that needs to be dealt with within this context, maybe as one possible option. Because the review committee said, what can anybody do? We will take, for example, I'm not saying that's the exact amount, 100 million to 410 on the basis of what DDG Acting Higher Education was saying, and only to find that there are more students who want that 100 million rand than what originally planned for. And what does Forte do? Can't chase away these poor students. So you split this 100 million even more. That is why the findings of the review committee is that at the moment, NSFAS is only funding 42% on average of the full cost of study. Not 100%. It's 42% on average. And there are also other discriminatory things, because a NSFAS loan, the kind of assistance you need to give a NSFAS student who is at UCT, which is our most expensive university, and the amount of assistance you give a student who is at Walter Sisulu, which is the lowest at the moment, is discriminatory in itself, because you will tend to give more to a student at UCT who is poor than a student who is at Walter Sisulu. So all those issues is a package of matters that we have already started looking into as a department, because some of them are policy, are broader policy issues that then we'll have to resolve and go to NSFAS and say, implement it along these guidelines that we have had. Monitoring of financial aid offices is a very important point. It must be done. We will have to do it. The Ministerial Review Committee had raised this matter, and this is an issue that we must also, in order to ensure that the other things that I was talking about and the members, honorable members, which they were raising, whether in fact is this money going to students who actually are supposed to be getting the money, or are there other things? Let me end, say, by answering the honorable member. I would not say that NSFAS has got a credibility problem. I think that would be taking it too far. Because NSFAS has lots of credibility amongst poor students in this country. It has actually helped thousands of them to access higher education, which is something that normally they wouldn't. I think let's call the problem with what it is. It's a capacity issue. That's what fundamentally the problem that we are dealing with is. It is a capacity issue. Because this is very well credibility, it's as if it's imperfect. You know, I mean, board has admitted ourselves. We appointed the review committee precisely because we realized that there is lot of problems and lots of other things that need to be done. I am committed, I want to say this to you, Chair and honorable members. I am really committed that we get to the bottom of these challenges, we are able to turn that around. That's why I've instructed the board to act with urgency. And we will do our best to ensure that we are able to address these problems, because we cannot afford a situation like this with such an important instrument. But can I end by making a plea as Minister of Higher Education and Training, as a reminder? You know, maybe we need to start saying less. This sounds like politics 101, you know, or accounting 101. Sounds like we are looking down upon 101. 101 is very important for first-year students, which we need to encourage to actually pass, given the fact that we have got a high failure rate. Maybe we could minimize that. For us, yes, we might derisively say, well, that sounds like accounting 101. Accounting 101 is very, very important. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Well, Comrade Minister, we want to thank you and once again indicate our appreciation that you're able to make time to be with us. I know Comrade Cronin will be here tomorrow, so we're happy to see accountability. Thank you very much.
Then I'm confused. Who, in what capacity was I being invited here, Comrade Jefferson? Thank you very much.
All right. Can we get responses to Pretoria's input? I just felt maybe let's allow the minister first so that we can then continue.
Chair, thank you. I'd like to respond to two of the issues, questions raised by the member. First one relating to the question of human resources and discipline. There are two aspects to discipline or perform human resources management in the organization. And both performance management and organizational discipline or workplace discipline are operational issues where the board has to ensure that the appropriate policies are in place and we receive reports on implementation of those policies. In relation to performance management, in the 2010 financial year, we oversaw the implementation of a policy on integrated performance management, with performance agreements having to be concluded for senior management as well as all staff in the organization. Towards the end of 2010, the first performance reviews in terms of those performance contracts were conducted, and the performance improvement measures now have to be put into place, and management needs to deal with that. With regard to workplace discipline specifically, where there have been transgressions, again, it's a management issue. It is an operational matter. The board actually cannot become involved in day-to-day workplace discipline. We do receive reports that disciplinary action has been taken, and there is an internal appeals process against disciplinary sanctions. I am aware of the fact, for example, that during the 2010 calendar year, there were two dismissals on the basis of workplace discipline. I am not sure that it is something that we can put into an annual report.
Well, it's something that we have in all the annual reports. I shouldn't say that the issue I was raising was that it's not there in the annual report.
Okay, then we will ensure that those statistics are reported
part
in the future.
Of the disclosure requirements.
Yeah. Part of disclosure, we will report that.
In very, very detailed form. I think if you can look at other annual reports right towards the end, you'll find very, very detailed information, or even the department. So I think we're raising it in that context so that people who are not here, when they read your report, they can have all the information necessary.
May I also the information on performance bonuses paid to staff as well?
Yeah, all those things. I see that it was only yesterday the Prime Minister of the UK was posting that of late debt is closing. Those kind of things about salaries or civil servants. You know, we have been doing this for years. So we'd want that your report should also, you know, entail those kind of details. Honorable Singh?
Thank you very much. I think what the minister said was quite reassuring. But what I'd like to know is we're second lowest in terms of debt recovery. I hope we're not second out of two. Are there other countries around the world? I know we need to find African solutions for African problems. Are there any countries around the world where there's better debt recovery and management of the system of student loans that you can tell us very briefly? And secondly, Chair, I know that the CEO of NASFAS is not part of the delegation because the Chairman said so in the beginning. But just a question, is the CEO anywhere in this room here? I mean, it's a public meeting. But is the CEO of NASFAS anywhere with us?
No, I can answer. He's not here. Just deal with the other one.
Chairperson, with your permission, I'm not going to start with the last one first.
After the last one.
Thank you. But to come to the question of being the second lowest, the Ministerial Review Committee found that we were the second lowest. Jamaica was the lowest. In answer to your question as to whether there are better models to follow, most certainly. However, we have something of a specialist model here in South Africa where our loans are income contingent. Not all student financial aid systems are income contingent. So the models that we could look to elsewhere in the world are very few. There are two other models. New Zealand is probably the closest to ours, and we certainly are looking at what lessons we can import from there. We need to really review our debt recovery practices as part of the way forward in quite some detail. We're also looking at the recommendations of the Ministerial Review Committee, and both the Chair of the Audit Committee and I served on the Ministerial Review Committee as part of our now new board due diligence mandate. So we are certainly taking the recommendations of that process into this new board's mandate. Chair, I don't know whether you would like me to answer Honourable Pretorius's question on the matter of the communication strategy. I see that we didn't get to that.
Yeah.
Would you like me to
address it? No, it has been asked. It must be answered, yeah.
Thank you. I think the new board is in agreement with the concerns raised by the Honourable Member. In the Ministerial Review report, we actually recommended that the obvious and logical partner to NSFAS, in light of the fact that demand far outstrips supply for funding, would be the Department of Basic Education, because NSFAS's customers, the borrowers for NSFAS loans, are in our high schools. We don't need to go and look for them. That would be the view of the new board. And we want to make sure that any expenditure which was approved by previous boards fits with our new mandate. So we will be reviewing this strategy quite thoroughly as we go on. It's part of our due diligence again.
All right.
Thank you.
Tobija?
Yeah, Leboha. We love to. This thing of human resource unit not being reported, can they of CAF just tell us whether have they paid any bonuses in the, you know, the year under review that we are talking about? If the answer is yes, can they then justify how do you arrive at that under the opinion obtained from AG? Secondly, Chair, it is on the 589 million, the gentleman here said that was by error. The payment is continuing. Students who are benefited are now paying. No cancellation was done in terms of written off, as it was. I would want to get it as to what prompted the return of you know, eligible people who are supposed to pay, who are currently paying. How do you arrive at just, you know, pressing a computer and said, no, you don't pay anymore while they're paying here? Is there a person who can be attached to this, you know, computer button default pressing? Because it's very interesting to me, Chair, to say, how do you arrive at that? Because if it wasn't for that, why couldn't they would have been, you know, making AG to understand and not capture this particular man? I'm not sure whether my question is very clear, Chair.
No, it is. I think the last one, comrade, was spoken to before. I think it was part of the questions raised by Steve. Of decisions taken without any appropriate audit evidence, for which the initial question was, is there anyone who is being held liable, responsible for it? And it appears that no one has been taken to task for that. So, but let me hand over to them to start. If there's anything they would like to add to that, well, they would. But I just wanted to say that it appears, and unfortunately because the CEO is not here, it appears you had a management that would take decisions based on assumptions that do not conform to accounting standards or processes.
Chair, I can answer the honourable member's question relating to performance bonuses being paid in the year under review. Currently, remuneration at NSFAS is not linked to performance, so I can confirm that no performance bonuses have been paid. There is a remuneration review process that was started during the course of 2010 with recommendations for a remuneration system. The board, towards the end of 2010, had agreed on a job grading system. So job gradings are currently being undertaken, but no performance bonuses have been paid to staff members.
Just like us, no performance bonus, no patent check. So, all right. Now, that's fine.
She may just follow up on the performance bonuses.
I'm not complaining, I'm just stating the fact.
Yeah,
okay.
You're following up on the performance bonus.
All right.
Can I just get clarity on page 28 of the annual report? There are bonuses indicated there. Are those then 13 checks, automatic bonuses, or what bonuses are those? Because some senior staff did receive bonuses according to the report, but it doesn't indicate what type of bonuses.
Chair, the senior management team of NSFAS currently is remunerated in terms of the same policy that applies to the senior management service in the public sector, and so they are able to structure their remuneration packages that could include a 13th check. So the total, the gross remuneration amount is determined, and those would be the bonuses that are reported, but they're not performance bonuses.
All right. Applause.
You said my question would be the last. That's why I have not been able to raise it. But I was asking about the monitoring system that NSFAS has in the institutions that they are sending money to. Because my concern is you can't just be pumping money into universities, not following up if it is used for its purpose. And then what is happening to, if there is any remainder in the coffers of such universities, etc. So I need to know the monitoring system.
Yeah.
Chairperson, money is only transferred to the institution, so it's just an indicative amount that they have. The money actually physically transfers only once the loan agreement between the student and NSFAS is signed. The indicative amount allocated to the institution, should it not be spent by, this is monitored on a monthly basis. It used to be monitored infrequently, and the department insisted, because of the history of unspent funds, that this is monitored monthly. Should an amount be unspent, it is transferred to where need is expressed by a particular institution. So we are constantly shifting. But the amount, it is not possible for an institution to have an amount in its account because the amounts are linked to the student's accounts.
So they only know they have this amount, but the
yes.
amount
it's an allocation. But it's not a physical transfer of funds.
Okay.
I just wanted to say I was not only interested in the monitoring of the transfer only, rather as well as to does the money go to the relevant people? As the Honorable Minister was talking about corruption, where people that are not supposed to be getting the aid are getting it. So you find that you might be giving money to people that do not need it, while those that need it are closed out. That's the monitoring I was checking.
Yeah, on that one, we can't guarantee 100%. There may be exceptions. But as far as possible, we are actually monitoring through engagement with the institutions and the verification of the forms as they come to NSFAS and satisfy ourselves.
Unless if I didn't understand, I thought you would say you transfer the money to the account of the university. So there's no money that goes to anybody. Because her concern was, do we not transfer money that gets into wrong hands and not to those who actually need it for education? Agree with you, Almasa?
As they are applying at the institution, they might not get what they need, whereas other students that do not need that fund, that have got favors of the management of the institution, might get it. This is the monitoring I'm checking. The process itself.
Yeah. Did you?
The room for error and the room for that is, of course, there. However, we do have internal audit of each institution that receives funds, which means random sampling of loan agreements, checking the systems, etc. In the last audit committee meeting of 2010, we agreed as an audit committee that in order to address concerns, that audit reports of these institutions, should they indicate any areas of concern, that these matters should be escalated to the Department of Higher Education. In this instance, seven institutions were escalated to the Department of Higher Education.
Which are these institutions?
Chairperson, I can't tell you offhand, but I can provide you with the details at a later stage.
Please, together with the budget of these institutions, can we have that list in, what is today, Tuesday? By next week, Tuesday? Week?
If possible, can we get their monitoring tool? If they've got an instrument of what you're talking about, coupled with what they're sending.
Do you have?
What?
Chair, this is a list of the institutions that were audited.
No. The institutions that were escalated.
CPUT, UCT, UWC, SUN, NWU, KZN.
What was the first one?
CPUT.
That is Cape Peninsula. Cape. Yeah. All right. Well, that's fine. Mange, you'll be the last deal.
Yes. Chairperson, on the issue of the 589 million that was written off, maybe the department could have taken, because Mr. Smith somewhere said to us that when these kids are given these loans, nobody knows if this kid will be employed or will be a dropout. But in my mind, something came to me to say, maybe some of these students passed away, and the only thing to know that they have passed away is through the Department of Home Affairs. And what I wanted to find out is, when you went to the Auditor General, Did you have a list to show that, okay, we are unable to trace this money because of this list, and then with even the deceased name being on it, it would have been easier to say that these ones really are not working, but you won't know if they are not employed. That you won't know. But if a person is deceased, it's better, because the Department of Home Affairs will let you people know. And if you went with that list to the Auditor General and say, what made us to write off this amount is because of 1, 2, 3. I think maybe it could have been better, but next time, do like that. Make sure that we have everything that the Auditor General needs. Thank you.
All right, still.
Thank you, Chair. I just need to check what the DG has said in reply to the previous question. When I asked the question concerning the verification of means test data by the students, I was told that the department and NSFAS have no means of verifying whether that data is actually true. And we are now told that they are monitoring it. So I want to know, what is the truth? Does the department and NSFAS actually have any capacity to verify whether the students' information on their means test is or is not true? Simple. Yes or no? Is there any verification of that data?
I want to plead that maybe let us leave that question, Honorable Steve, because as you correctly point out, and even the review that was done indicated that the area around the means test is a risk area, and there is agreement that it must be reviewed. So
I still think we can have an assurance that either there is or is not any means of verification. If there isn't, then we need to know that. I don't see any reason why we can't get an answer.
Well, the point I'm making is that the means test is a risk area that needs to be attended to.
Fine. So you, Chair, are confirming on behalf of the department that there is no means of verification. Is that what you're saying to me? Because I would prefer it for the department to say that rather than you saying it.
Chair, at the risk of missing the point, these institutions are audited. The application of the means test is audited. What the Honourable Member might be referring to is, how do you verify beyond all reasonable doubt that the information that you've been given when you apply the means test is absolutely accurate? And that, of course, is a difficulty. And that is some of the grayness that's within which this kind of a model works.
Back to square one.
Just in response to my one question is still outstanding. The duration of the contract of Mr. Seymour.
Chairperson, the duration of the current CEO is 5 years, but he has already served 1 year.
And is already on his way out. ZTG, it raises those questions. How do we employ? Employ this man for 5 years, and within a year, we realize there's something seriously wrong here. It raises the questions around how people get employed. But I want to think that the minister is not here, and we have been listening, and in some instances he wanted to raise some issues, and we'll talk to you. I want to give you the opportunity. Before you do so, I want to check with the chairperson. Ngiyabona ngathi khona into ufuna ukukhuluma. So unikeza isikhathi ukuthi akhulume emva kwalokho, unikeza uchairperson uDG. If there's anything you would like to clarify, you would like to emphasize, you would like to highlight, give you that opportunity. Chairperson.
I was going to
comment quickly on this issue of the CEO and the number of years that he has served. And I want to make the members to be aware that he had 1 year probation period. He was still under probation, as we speak. Yeah.
No, thank you very much. I would like really to welcome this interrogation and engagement because I think it better serves the country that whenever anyone is given a responsibility to improve the lives of thousands of the youth out there, he or she takes that work quite seriously. We note the areas that have been raised and those that we have actually picked up. And in terms of ensuring the institution of measures in monitoring and evaluating the performance of NSFAS on an ongoing basis, in terms of the PMSA, Treasury regulations, as well as NSFAS Act, would actually be not found wanting. We have an agreement with the current board that there is not going to be a reward for any failure and inaction, as well as the releasing of duty, either on their part or of the management, and we would like and we demand to see action. And where it is appropriate to us, will act on them. And the turnaround time of putting measures in place towards addressing these issues is 3 months, and we mean business. And we put to them, if there is any capacity issue in relation to them fulfilling this prime mandate and objective, we are willing to come to the party and give all the support which is required and which is in our power. We are not taking the interrogation as a negative thing. We think it is important for the country to know how billions that have been allocated to help the youth of our country are used, and those who have been given that responsibility and accepted it account properly. We would really welcome that even next time. And the minister has actually really read the Riot Act to us, because initially we were presented with a recovery plan of a 3-year period, and we rejected it after engaging as well as engaging the Treasury and the Accounting General office about it. We said it's not acceptable. And I think one of the reasons why there are matters that are under serious review now in terms of management are as a result of our insistence that we must not reward non-performance under any circumstances. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. I want to thank you and the departmental officials you are with, as well as the board, National Treasury. Well, as you know, sometimes the lazy day in the office, there are no issues, so you have to sit through it. You never know. And sometimes it becomes very hectic. The Auditor General as well, we thank you for having been here. just in case. As always will be the case. But we do want to say, Chairperson of the Board and the DG, that we think there must be stability at the top management level of the institution for it to prosper and fulfill its mandate. Our experience in this committee has shown that when there is no stability at the top, things fall apart. And we cannot overemphasize the importance of exemplary leadership at the level of the CEO, the CFO, the audit committee, and other equally important levels within the organization. And for an institution that is funded by government money, we need to see value for money in investing public funds in the institution. We want to see public funds administered with the highest level of integrity that inspires public confidence. NSFAS is a uniquely South African model, and its mandate is critical in the development of the country. It is for this reason that NSFAS must operate well in order to realize the dream of the average South African student who wishes, you know, to prosper in this country, go to tertiary. And well, we would want, you know, in the broader context of the ongoing reforms in the theater of higher education system, NSFAS will be able to play that critical role of assisting government in that, within that broader space of performing higher education, especially in relation to access to higher education. And we hope that we'll link up with our colleagues in the Portfolio Committee of Higher Education, who have the responsibility of in-year monitoring, to make sure that some of these issues and changes that have been spoken to, you know, are being taken on board, so that when we do review the annual report in September, it might be that some of these things have been looked at during the course of the year. Lastly, I do want to say, DG, that we don't look kindly in this committee to institutions that do not build capacity and rely on consultants. Because the one thing consultants are sure of, whenever they do business, they create a situation of dependence so they can continue to have business. They're not there to assist. They're not the SIU. They're there to make money. So the issues of capacity that the minister spoke to, we would want to emphasize that there is need to build capacity so that this institution can run its affairs, we can employ competent people who can do the job. Lastly, I must say, DG, that listening to you, and I'm sure I'm speaking for my comrades here, it was quite pleasing to hear an accounting officer speak the way you did, which is what the Auditor General, you know, complains about, lack of leadership. He always says, and we agree, the tone is always set from the top, from the minister to the DG. That is what determines the tone within an institution. And I think that sense of firmness and decisiveness is what we need, and that is what we lack if we are to get public administration in its right place. So I wish you all of the best, and hope that we could have this replicated all over, ensure that the public is served, and is served well. Well, comrades, we're meeting tomorrow, same place, with the Road Traffic Management Corporation. I'm sure that the comrades who are responsible, Comrade Roy and Singh, then all KZN affair for tomorrow.
Thank you very much. You are calling us again tomorrow.
No, not at all. Thank you very much.